This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Richard Ady. Welcome to the show. Today, getting specific with aged care. This is aged care you have when you're still at home. And Beach Shack Memories, the author Rosie Scott will be sharing hers a bit later on. I might get you to share yours too. How many Kiwis do you know? Some of them aren't doing too well in Australia, and what's been a special relationship between us and them is showing a bit of strain. For decades, we'd been able to live in each other's countries and receive the same entitlements as the locals. I went to university in New Zealand and then journalism school. I voted. I was treated like a Kiwi. And if you're an Australian who crosses the Tasman to live there now, it's still pretty much the same deal. But 10 years ago, the rules in Australia changed. A lot of people still don't realise this. And the situation's now very different for Kiwis living here. Many are caught in a kind of limbo, working and paying Australian taxes, but unable to claim any support if that work ends. And not able either to send their children to university or TAFE, except as full fee-paying students. Tensions were brought to a head by the Brisbane flood and Cyclone Yasi earlier this year when Kiwis, and most of them are in Queensland, found themselves ineligible for disaster relief. Crystal Berardello is a Maori businesswoman and community leader from the Gold Coast. She runs a website called Maori in Oz. Welcome to Life Matters, Crystal.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, Paul Hamer's a senior associate of the Institute of Policy Studies at Victoria University in Wellington. He specialised in Maori migration to Australia. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Richard.
And Graham Hugo is a professor of geography at the University of Adelaide. Welcome, Graham.
Good morning.
Crystal, I want to begin with you, actually. In January this year, you were supporting your fellow New Zealanders during the Brisbane flood, going to the emergency centres and seeing who needed what, essentially.
Yes. Yes, we'd gone there just to offer support services. And when we got there, we met up with the Centrelink, and they actually told us that there was a big upheaval with the New Zealand citizens, that they felt really upset, Centrelink. They were having to turn them away because they weren't qualifying for the disaster relief fund. So we'd spoken to quite a few New Zealand citizens when who were very distraught. They'd lost their homes, they'd lost all of their belongings. So the Centrelink at the time weren't sure, and they were just telling New Zealanders, just apply anyway. And I spoke to the person that was in charge of Centrelink, if they could actually confirm that, which they did, through some calls to head office. And it was then that we realised it was quite a serious situation.
Yes.
You know, where these people had lost everything and then they weren't even going to get the most basic of help.
So since then, you've led a campaign with a petition. Tell us about that.
Yes, through the actual floods, and what we'd got confirmed from Centrelink, I, with a few other people, had actually contacted the New Zealand and Australian governments and the New Zealand consulate to see if there could be any kind of help made available. So I ended up doing a letter pleading to the New Zealand and Australian governments, letting them know everything that was happening, and the Australian government did grant an ex gratia payment for any New Zealand citizens that were affected by the flood. But before the flood had even finished, Cyclone Yasi hit, and again, we had the same situation where New Zealand citizens weren't entitled to that funding. So we had to put a request through again for some more assistance, which again was granted. It was a flow-on effect just from the flood.
Right.
And from that, because we contacted New Zealand media, it was quite huge in New Zealand. The news got back to New Zealand citizens across Australia, and then we just got inundated with other issues that were directly in result of the special category visa.
Well, I'll come back to you to kind of round that off, but I want to bring in Paul Hamer in Wellington. Just remind us, Paul, how New Zealanders have traditionally viewed Australia and their options here.
Well, there's a long-standing free entry between the two countries that goes way back, and traditionally equal numbers really of New Zealanders have moved to Australia as Australians have come to New Zealand. Certainly if you look in the 19th century and periods of boom and bust and the economies of the various Australian colonies in New Zealand, there was a lot of movement in both directions. And that really settled down in the 20th century. But since the 1960s or so, in the jet age, New Zealanders have moved to Australia in big numbers. And so the migration flow has largely been in one direction. And Australia has offered New Zealanders a lot of things. It's offered bright lights in big cities, but it's certainly offered better economic opportunities probably since the 1970s. I think that's a key reason for the large numbers of New Zealanders shifting during that period. And it's come and gone as the New Zealand and Australian economies have peaked and troughed, but by and large the migration flow has been mainly in that direction.
All right. Well, Graham Hugo, if I could bring you in, what do we know about the population makeup of New Zealanders in Australia?
Well, the New Zealand-born population in Australia, at the last count, was about 530,000 people, which is a very significant number of all New Zealanders, I guess.
Mm.
One of the things which I think is very interesting compared to other migrant groups is that if you control for age, because the New Zealand population in Australia is younger, but if we control for age, they're pretty much the same as the Australian-born population in socioeconomic status, in terms of occupation, education, and a whole range of areas. And that's very different because if we look at the rest of the migrant population, it differs quite significantly from the Australian-born population, even if we control for age.
Now, Graham, I mentioned that the laws changed under the Howard government. Give us the gist of them and why they were deemed necessary at the time.
Well, right through the 90s, there was a gradual taking away of the privileges which New Zealanders enjoyed compared to other migrants. And then in 2001, there was quite a significant change where there was, I think, concern by the Howard government on the disparity between the number of Australians going to New Zealand and the number of New Zealanders coming to Australia, and the Social Security Bill, which was ascribed to the New Zealanders in Australia. So it was, first of all, they asked the New Zealand government to make a contribution towards the payment, particularly of labour market benefits. The New Zealand government refused to do that. And so this new legislation came in, which made them ineligible for labour market and a range of other benefits from Centrelink, unless they were eligible for Australian citizenship or Australian residency, which would have meant that they would have had to fulfil the same points assessment characteristics that other migrants have to set.
There was a cut-off, though, wasn't there? I mean, if you were here before 2001...
Yes. Yes, 2001, yeah.
You essentially got the same deal that you always got.
That's right,
yeah. Okay. So if you were here before 2001, you live in Brisbane, your house was affected by the floods, you would have been able to get a Centrelink payment?
That's right.
I see. Well, on Life Matters today, we are hearing about this disparity, which some of which go back to the 90s and some of which were introduced under the Howard government in about 2001. And this is between us and New Zealanders in Australia compared to Australians in New Zealand. With me is Graham Hugo, Professor of Geography at the University of Adelaide. Paul Hamer, he's a historian and researcher at Victoria University in Wellington. And Crystal Broadalow, she's a businesswoman, Maori woman and community leader. She's in Queensland. She runs the website Maori in Oz. I want to come back to you, Crystal, because what I want, I suppose, if you can, is sort of spell out what New Zealanders aren't entitled to in Australia that they might assume they would get.
There's just about every area. We've got education where children that are born in Australia, let alone who come over after the 2000, they're not entitled to HECS fees for university.
Aren't they Australian citizens, though, if they're born here?
Only after they've lived here for 10 years without moving out of the country at all can they qualify for citizenship.
Okay. What about then if you come over from, I don't know, you come over from New Zealand and you've got a job all sorted, it all goes well for a few years, then, you know, get the GFC, there are redundancies, or perhaps you get an injury at work. How are you covered there?
Well, you're not entitled to any kind of unemployment benefit whatsoever. you can live here for 10 years. A law was recently changed, and now you're entitled to 6 months unemployment benefit maximum. So a lot of families are actually in that situation you've just mentioned, have been working. So I know some people that have been here for 9 years, recently out of work, and can't get any assistance to tie them over to get into the next job.
Right. Okay, what about, and I'm guessing disability pension is probably out then.
Yes. Yes, even for, if you have a child that's born in Australia and say by the time they're 6 years of age they're diagnosed with autism or some other hereditary disease, they're not entitled to any health assistance.
They're
no
not.
Caregivers at all. The parents can't get any assistance.
What about if you're going through, I don't know, as a family, a bit of a rough patch, you might look out for some publicly funded counselling or perhaps a youth worker to support a wayward kid. Is that an option?
No. there's no options for any kind of social services for if you've arrived after 2001.
Right. Okay, I'll come back to you, but I want to go back to Paul Hamer. You've studied, obviously, Crystal's a Maori woman in New Zealand. You've studied Maori in Australia and talked to most of them, I think. What proportion of New Zealanders here are Maori?
Well, it's a little bit difficult to say, but I think possibly a higher proportion than are in New Zealand, where there's about 14% of the population are Māori. I think it's possible that in Australia the proportion would be higher. I mean, one thing, of course, you have to remember is that Māori will continue to sort of recognise themselves as such, where other New Zealanders who move to Australia will inevitably become white Australians, and so the Māori population in Australia is a quite distinct group, a sort of a long-lasting proportion of the New Zealand diaspora. So possibly there's, I'd say, getting close to 150,000 Māori in Australia now, which is probably about one in six of all Māori in total.
Does that mean then, and I'll probably put this to Crystal a bit later as well, that if you're Māori in Australia, you are less likely than a Pākehā New Zealander, a white New Zealander, to choose to take Australian citizenship.
Well, we know that's the case. I think the take-up rate of Australian citizenship by New Zealand-born Māori is around 23%, and the take-up rate for those who identify in the census as New Zealanders is around 37% or so. So Māori, to the extent to which these benefits are not available to citizens, Māori are more affected by that than other New Zealanders. So yes, that's true, absolutely.
The thing is, I mean, I spent a long time in New Zealand and then a fair bit of time when I was in London living with New Zealanders. When New Zealanders are away from New Zealand, whether they're Māori or Pākehā or whatever they are, Māori culture becomes kind of the de facto New Zealand culture once they're out of the country, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. That's very much the case. And so New Zealand festivals, New Zealand-themed festivals in Australia, which occur from time to time, tend to be basically Māori ones. And New Zealanders of Pākehā extraction tend to gravitate towards Māori to give themselves a sense of that, of home, of New Zealand identity in Australia. You can see that happening quite frequently. I mean, one thing to note, though, just about that 23% of Māori who become citizens is that that's basically the lowest of any ancestry group in Australia, apart from, say, the Japanese, who lose their own citizenship if they become Australian citizens. And it compares with a take-up rate of Australian citizenship for all overseas-born people in Australia of around 75%. So to the extent to which I'm interested in all these issues in terms of the position of Māori, it's because they're even more disenfranchised and marginalised than New Zealanders overall who are affected by these rules.
On Life Matters today, we are talking about the situation of New Zealanders in Australia, specifically really those who came after 2001 when laws changed. And it turns out, I did not know this, it turns out that New Zealanders in Australia who came after 2001 are not entitled to a whole lot of benefits that you would just think that you would get. Whereas Australians who go to New Zealand once they've been there 2 years completely are. And with me is Paul Hamer. We've got him in Victoria University in Wellington, and Graham Hugo, Professor of Geography at University of Adelaide, and Christelle Broadlow, she's a Maori businesswoman, runs the website Maori in Oz. I want to come back to you, Crystal. Paul's already touched on this, but there's a lot of Maori cultural celebration in Australia, isn't there?
Yes, we celebrate our Waitangi Day, which is our New Zealand National Day. We celebrate that all across Australia, and on average we would have about 10,000 Kiwis, New Zealand citizens, turning up to these events just to really have a moment of celebrating our history, our culture.
Mm. And it's not just Maori, is it? It's not just Maori or even Maori and Pacific Islander, it's Pākehā New Zealanders too.
Most definitely. Yes, it's everybody that's from New Zealand wants to come to these events just so they can have a bit of sense of home.
Mm. Now, what about citizenship? Because for New Zealanders in this situation, if they can take out Australian citizenship, and I know it's by no means a fait accompli, it would mean access to all those Australian entitlements. You've been here a while. Would you consider becoming Australian?
Yes, I've been here for 15 years, and it's only... I thought I was going to go home after a few years, but now that my sons have grown up and have Australian partners, I'm actually seriously considering applying for Australian citizenship this year and making Australia my home more permanently.
Mm.
And my biggest reason is because I am very interested in the government and I'd like to be able to vote.
I've got friends of mine who are New Zealanders who came in about 2006, actually. They've done it, and they've done it because their oldest is in year 11 and they can see her going to university here. So that was the thing that made them think, well, we don't know how long we're going to be here.
Yes.
We want options for the kids.
Yes.
It hasn't stopped them cheering for the All Blacks or the Silver Ferns, I have to tell you.
No, that patriotism is always there. So, yeah, no, the reasons to get citizenship, it's always a personal one and it's always very, very broad. The reasons are broad.
Yeah. Well, Graham Hugo, if I could come to you, would it be easy for most New Zealanders to gain Australian citizenship if they want to?
Not really, and I think that's an important point that in what Paul was saying is that it isn't necessarily a choice that the Maori group have a higher level of not taking up citizenship. It relates to the fact as to whether they can, because in order to be able to qualify for permanent residence in Australia, New Zealanders have to meet the same criteria that other migrant groups do in terms of occupation, education and so on. And we know that the Maori migrants from New Zealand have a lower on average level of occupational attainment and so on. So it's not just a matter of choosing not to take citizenship. In many cases, they don't have they don't meet the criteria in order to qualify as permanent residents. And so it's not just a straightforward process for those who've come since 2001. For those who come previously, of course, it's pretty much automatic.
So it used to be that you could just come here. You didn't have to worry about citizenship because you were treated like an Australian.
Exactly.
Then we changed the rules, and you can still come here as a New Zealander. You can come here and live here forever, essentially, but you're no longer entitled to the same things that Australians are. And unless you meet the criteria just like everybody else, you can't become an Australian.
That's right.
So you could end up in a double bind, couldn't you? You could spend 30 years here being a taxpayer, everything's sweet, and then it's not.
And, of course, it applies to all other migrant groups as well, not just the New Zealanders.
No, but they had a different deal, and now they don't. I think that's the issue. Mm. Paul Hamer, this is an issue, obviously, for people who come from New Zealand since 2001, so over the last 10 years, but surely they know what they're getting into.
Well, you'd hope so, but when times are tough in New Zealand and moving to Australia seems like the only option, people will still do it. I think we've seen a bit of an exodus from Christchurch, for example. I'm not sure if that's been all to Australia. I know a lot of it's been internal within New Zealand to Auckland, for example. But Australia, because it's such a big place and it's part of the same labour market, it really offers opportunities. And so for those who are desperate to make a change in their lives and to provide better for their families, Australia will still be a big carrot. And so people will still leave, and yet they are putting themselves into a vulnerable situation by doing so. And of course, a lot of them won't come back again if they haven't made it in Australia, because to come back having failed to do well in Australia can be sort of shameful for some people.
Yes.
And so you'll find New Zealanders often getting in trouble in Australia and then not coming home again where they would be better supported. and so getting into really difficult situations.
It's wrapped up in expectation. You move from New Zealand in thinking, well, I'm going to do better. And if you don't do better, it's hard to go home. And you find that you're less supported.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, Graham, I have to wrap this up, I think. But can I ask you, because John Key, the New Zealand Prime Minister, has been reported as urging Julia Gillard to look after New Zealanders better. Would it be in Australia's interests to look again at those rules that came in 2001 and I suppose return them to the way they were?
I think we're already starting to see greater discussion between Australia and New Zealand in terms of migration. The last couple of years, the first time that there's been a joint meeting of governments, of the two governments on migration issues, and I think it could well be that we could move towards a harmonisation of the migration schemes of both countries. I think that's definitely always on the agenda, and I think raising these issues in a public way, which I think has happened over the last couple of months, is likely to mean that it may well be on the agenda of the next meeting between the two countries. So I think there's always a chance that we could return to the previous arrangement.
All right. Look, that is where we'll leave it. Thank you all of you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That was Graham Hugo, Professor of Geography at the University of Adelaide, Paul Hamer, who's a historian at the Victoria University in Wellington, and Crystal Broderlow. She's a businesswoman. She's a Maori community leader. She runs the website Maori in Oz. I think that you can't say, as the Prime Minister said, New Zealanders are family and have this. It seems to me an inconsistency. I'd very much like to hear from you, though. Jump on the website abc.net.au/rn/Life Matters, or you can find us on Facebook very easily, or you can always give us a ring, 0283 1430. And we're going to have a bit more on the land of the long white cloud a bit later in the show. But next on Life Matters, meeting diversity needs a bit better aged care packages for sexual minorities.